We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
That'll take you back. No, this isn't the Tony Oren show. That is the guitar, the beautiful guitar work of Rick Hayden, and he's in the studio with us tonight. How about that? He came all the way downtown on this first day of 2020, and we're visiting with somebody that I really believe defines the very definition of success, and you're going to understand why as we go along here tonight. He's rubbed shoulders, and he's very close friends with many of the greats, the truly greats in music. But lucky for us, he still makes his home here in the St. Louis area, and he's built a career on teaching others at Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. You tried to retire some years ago, but they wouldn't let you.
I tried in 2015, but I continue to teach guitar, and I run my wire choir.
What's a wire choir?
That's the guitar ensemble. I call them the wire choir.
Oh, that's cool.
Bucky actually gave me that name for him. So,
well, if Bucky Pizzarelli came up with the name, you know it's good. Well, welcome back, Professor Emeritus Rick Hayden, to KMOX.
It's good to be here. Last time I was here was 2006 when that CD was released.
Yeah.
It was on the air with Carney.
Oh, yeah. As in John.
John Carney, yeah. and John Pizzarelli and I were on the air together, actually.
Yeah, I think there's photographs of that online. I think I've seen that before.
It's inside the CD cover if you purchase. Buy in bulk.
Yes. Yes, indeed. The CD, the album that Rick Hayden is referring to, is a really great album. We played Tony's tune that Tony Oren, who was the overnight guy at KMOX, that's how he'd open his show every night. And
it was I was introduced to the tune, actually.
Yeah, me too. I had never heard it before.
I didn't even know who Tony Mottola was.
Wow.
I would hear that coming home from gigs late at night when Tony was on KMOX. And I called in one night and said, Tony, who is that, first of all? And he said, Tony Mottola. And I said, cool, you can play the whole thing in its entirety so I could tape it off the radio.
Did he do it?
He did it.
Oh, that's cool.
That's what I transcribed it from, was that little cassette tape.
Anyway, it's a beautiful album. It's called Just Friends. They do the song Just Friends on it, obviously. But it's hard to find now.
It is. It's on iTunes. I mean, you can stream it or you can download, as most people are doing today.
Well, we're going to talk about the music industry. I want to talk about some of your friends who are the musical greats that I referenced here in the open. But let's go back, and I want to give people, and I'm curious about some things, too. You grew up in the Alton, Illinois area.
Yes, correct.
In Alton proper?
I was born in Alton, yes. The same place Miles Davis was, but years later.
Yes. Not that many years later.
Well, a few.
So tell us about your family life growing up. What was it like back then?
Well, you know, growing up, I spent most of my youth in the woods. And there wasn't a lot of music. My dad had some Hank Williams records that I would listen to. And then my oldest brother would start bringing 45s home. And that's where I heard Chuck Berry and Johnny B. Goode. And I heard that. I was probably 11, 12 years old. And then, as you and I both had the same experience, the Beatles showed up on Ed Sullivan, and then I had to have a guitar. I got a guitar at 14, graduating eighth grade. My mom bought me a little package, Spiegel catalog, old Craftsman and an amp, and I started trying to learn how to play rock and roll.
So you mentioned you have a brother. What siblings? Tell us about your siblings.
I have two older brothers, a younger brother that actually worked here in town with me for years, is singer and plays a little bit of guitar, and then my sister, who's a pharmacist.
Hmm. What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a machinist and a shade tree stock car driver.
Cool.
He drove the dirt tracks around town here, St. Charles and Alton and Belleville.
Did you see Ford versus Ferrari?
I love that movie.
Me too. It's like the best movie I've seen in years.
That is so good. And Christian Bale and Matt Damon did such a great job. See, my whole life could have changed easily because Carroll Shelby was going to build a plant in Marine, Illinois, which is like 10 minutes from where I am.
Ah.
At the old Nike base that is in Marine.
Wow, I never knew that.
And I could have easily ended up working there because the Shelby Cobra is my favorite car as well. So I love that movie. I thought that movie was so good.
It is. It's like a throwback. It's like an old-time movie. I mean, they don't have to use any vulgar language. There's no questionable scenes. I mean, it's just a great movie.
It's just a great movie. My son and I went together, and he was completely turned on to the whole thing. My dad would have loved that movie.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So you get a guitar out of the catalog,
yep.
And you start playing. I mean, were you, you know, you're a very, people that know you, I mean, you're a very schooled, very educated musician at a very high level. Is that how it started? Did you start legitimately reading music?
No, I am. Till I was 18, 19 years old, I was pretty much self-taught. I had a couple of lessons at a music store in Alton with God rest his soul, Bill Schrader. He taught at Halpin Music in Alton. And I had a couple of lessons with Bill, but primarily from 14 till I started at SIU as a student, I was self-taught. I played everything from records. That's how I learned to play.
You're an alumnus of SIUE.
I am.
You started in 68?
I started in 1968.
Yeah.
And just quickly flunked out in the first year. And then my mother kept telling me, you have to have something to fall back on. So I went to, it's now called Southwestern Illinois College.
SWIC.
It was called Belleville Area College at the time. So I drove from Alton to Belleville. To get an electronics degree. I got a degree in electronics technology from Belleville Area College.
Now I'm starting to connect the dots.
Yeah.
Because people that all know Rick know that he's really kind of a crafty, fix-it kind of guy.
MacGyver, they call me.
MacGyver.
Yeah.
If you just tuned in, we're visiting with Professor Rick Hayden of SIUE. Fantastic musician. Many people wouldn't argue that he's probably the best guitar player in this part of the country, if not the entire country. Well, that's a lot. There's a lot of guitar
that's
players,
a long shot.
Yeah, but certainly in the St. Louis area. Next, I want to talk about your early years because I think that you were kind of part of a rock and roll scene of the '60s and '70s.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Hayden on KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Clint Hosse visiting with Rick Hayden of SIUE and the St. Louis area. And before we... paid some bills here. We were talking about the rock and roll music scene. And the only reason I bring this up, Rick, is I've seen photographs of you with long hair and guitars and bell bottoms. So there was a rock and roll scene. Was this an Illinois thing?
It was, well, yeah, kind of metro, you know.
Yeah.
My band would do sets with a group called Blue that featured guys like Mike McDonald.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know.
Michael McDonald.
Michael McDonald.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the wild thing was that I did gigs with him when he was, I couldn't have been 16 or 17. And that voice was there already. No gray hair, but he already had a beard.
Impressive. Yeah, Charlie Brennan was playing back some old interviews that he's done over the years, and he had Kenny Loggins on, and they were talking about Michael McDonald.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of guys around here. I got to see the Allman Brothers out at the Castaways by the airport.
And were they known as the Allman Brothers then?
No, they were called the Allman Joys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite a deal. But there was a tremendous scene here back in late 60s, early 70s. And then I was thinking about it on the way over here. It's like late 70s and early 80s, I was working over here 5 and 6 nights a week. I played at the Ballpark Hilton for almost a year in that lounge at the Ballpark Hilton. It was the Breckenridge Hotel at that time. And the band I was in, it was called Oasis. And we played there 5, 6 nights a week for almost a year. And then played the Chase for a long time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Charlie's in Granite City had music 7 nights a week. You know?
Did you play at a place called the Upstream Lounge?
I played often at the Upstream Lounge.
But that was later.
That was later.
That's in another chapter.
That's chapter 2.
Okay, so let's get back to the Rick Hayden story. So you're playing pop music, rock and roll music, and you've got a degree in electronics.
Correct.
And you go back to SIUE?
I did. I went back for about a year. And I, at this time, now I'm married, and my wife is finished her undergraduate degree and is working for a venture store. She was the domestics manager at Venture.
What does that mean?
It's like where you pots and pans and sheets and pillowcases.
Yeah.
And so she came home one night and said, I hate my job. I want to quit. And I go, well, quit. And she goes, I want to go back to school. I go, okay. I said, I just got a call today. A guy wants me to play. He's an Elvis impersonator. So I took a gig with a guy here in town. His name is Ron Furr.
I saw Ron Furr before.
I played for Ron for till my wife finished her master's degree in business, and so put her through graduate school playing with an Elvis impersonator. So I was out of school when she finished. I went back to school, and that was in like 79 or something. And I went back. I just literally went back just because she wanted me to finish my degree. So I went back to school. And I was taking music classes, and I was sitting in the university center, and Billy Barnett, another local guitar player here in town, great player, came down, and he said, Rick, because I had been playing Kennedy's 3 nights a week on the landing playing jazz. And Billy knew that. Billy would come and see me. And so I'm sitting down there. Billy goes, do you know about Brett Stamps? And I said, well, Brett Stamps, what? He goes, they're starting a jazz program here at the university. He goes, I told Brett Stamps about you. You need to go see him. So I went over, found out, and I was the first graduate with a jazz performance degree from Southern Illinois University.
And what year was that?
1982.
Okay, but you're playing rock and roll, but then just through doing all of these performances and gigs, you sort of got into jazz on your own?
I was telling somebody this story the other day. It was 1972. I was still had the rock band together. 73, still had the rock band together. And I don't know this because, and everybody checks this stuff because they can Google it now or go on the internet. So don't hold me to this. But whatever year the Paranoid album by Black Sabbath was released was when I decided I'm going to play jazz.
What do you mean? You don't like Black Sabbath?
No, it was just the whole, I felt like it. What the music I had been playing Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, Jeff Beck, and then that came, and I just it seemed kind of dumbed down to me from what I had been doing. And I also was suddenly introduced to John McLaughlin and the Mahavishnu Orchestra and Pat Martino, George Benson, and then I heard Wes Montgomery, and then I was completely sold. Once I heard Wes, I was like, geez, that's the way I want to play the guitar.
And do you play with your thumb like Wes?
I am finding, you know, I'm almost 70. I'll be 70 in June. And I find I don't play with the pick very much anymore. It lays on, especially being home as much as I am now. And I play, the guitars are in every room. And I play constantly. I've found that I just play with my fingers. Because I still play classical guitar.
Yes.
Right? Dave Engelke was my teacher that really got me started at SIU. That's how I got into the music department, was through Dave Engelke. Because I was not trained. I couldn't read. I didn't know anything. I didn't even know about key signatures. I knew nothing. And I wanted to get back into the music department after I finished it at SWCC. And so I learned classical gas from the record so I could audition for Dave.
By ear.
By ear. And so I went in and I played the whole thing for him. And God bless him. God rest his soul. I love that man. I played it for him, and he kind of had this smirk on his little smile on his face, and he goes, so how'd you learn that? And I said, I took it off the record, to be honest, like that. And he goes, you transcribed it by ear off of the record? He goes, nice job. And I go, but I can't read. He goes, it's all right, we'll fix that.
Well, how did they fix it? Because not everybody can do that.
Well, I was 22 or 23 at that time. You know, there's still time. And if you, it's just something, you know, most people just make excuses for it. You just got to go sit down and start dealing with it.
You know?
It's not any different than learn how to play Crossroads, you know, or Sunshine of Your Love. You know, it's to say you just got to do it.
Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because our guest last hour, Brian Moran, who's a guy that helps you get more done in a shorter period of time, that's exactly what he was talking about. You got to take the action to get it done.
You have to take the action.
You don't focus on, hey, someday I'm going to be Wes Montgomery.
No.
You have to take all the steps. And, you know, you told me that one time when I came over to visit you. You said there's no shortcuts.
There's no shortcuts. That's the quickest way is just to sit down and do it. Learn the notes on the fingerboard.
Yeah, exactly. If you just tuned in, we're visiting with Professor Rick Hayden of SIUE. And coming up, I want to tell you a little bit about Rick's environment and what that was like the times that I've gone over to visit him at the university, because I think it's pretty interesting. Rick Hayden on KMOX tonight.
This is Maria Kina from the news department, wanting to wish you and your family the healthiest and happiest holiday season.
Happy holidays from KMOX.
That's Rick Hayden music, Soulville. I saw you play this song one time Jazz at the Bistro years ago.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
I'm sure we played that there. It was probably with this group.
That's some really great nighttime jazz radio music there.
There, isn't it?
I love that.
Nice sets of mood.
You know, I just want to tell this story, see if I can paint this picture. Because in my other life, I drive around a lot all day, and I'm in different places around the St. Louis metropolitan area. So whenever I would be somewhere near Edwardsville and SIUE, I would try to make a point to stop in and see Rick Hayden. And it was just, to me, like an oasis. You know, first of all, you drive into the SIUE campus with the beautiful prairie-style buildings, and it's just so relaxing.
It is.
And I would pull up and park probably where I shouldn't have parked, in front of Dunham Hill. Dunham Hall.
Dunham Hall.
And I would walk in and head back to Rick's office. Was just a little treasure of musical instruments and photographs. And sometimes I would walk in and you'd be teaching a class and you'd motion for me to come into the classroom.
Yeah.
And I got to really watch you in action. I think there was one time you actually called on me and I maybe said a few words, but I always loved watching you work with young people. And you have this demeanor where you are, you're not a pushover, but you do it in a very motivational way. And I think there's really an art to that. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't. I'm just being the way I didn't get an education degree. I got a performance degree. So when they asked me to teach, it was. You're really improvising again. You know, so a lot of what I ended up using in the classroom is improvised, there's this phrase I heard Count Basie say this one time. He was talking about Lester Young, and he said, somebody was interviewing Count Basie and said, well, how do you think Lester Young ended up being able to play? He said, that's just the way he was. It's just the way he was. So I've really spent a lot of time in my life just trying to be myself. This is what you see is what you get.
Well, you have a very motivational way about you without being a pushover. And to take that one step further, over the years with the musicians that I've known that studied under you, I've asked all of them. I said, what is Rick like as a teacher? What's his style? And they all say, you better know it backwards and forwards because you're not going to get by with anything. But and this leads me to the bigger question of getting a degree in music. What's sort of the state of the union right now? What is your thought on that?
Well, because I'm retired, I can say this now. Higher education in general has started to be driven by enrollment instead of when SIU started, like my, and I am that example. I had no background and they took me. And we've evolved into this thing where you have to have an ACT score at a certain level or you don't get in. I don't think that's good.
Yeah, because people are different. You know, you may have not done well in grade school or high school, but you get into college and you're focused on something that really means something to you. You get to a certain age and you're more mature. And I don't think that you can just say, you know, there's an apple, there's an orange, I mean, and label people, because people are complicated.
And I think the other mistake higher education has made is that you're trying to guarantee somebody a job. I didn't go back to school to get a job. I had no idea when I went back to school that I would end up being a college professor. I went back because they had information there that I wanted and needed. I needed to learn those things. I needed to know the nomenclature of music. I needed to know theory. I needed to know how to read music. I needed all that stuff, and they could give it to me, right? And that's why I went back. I didn't go back to go, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this degree, and then I'll be a college professor. I'll go teach somewhere. Never, none of that.
But, I mean, I'm not sure if you really answered my question yet. I mean, what advice would you give young people if they were considering going to school to major in music?
Don't, it's like your first guest. You said he was talking about goals. Don't set the goal of I'm going to finish school and I'm going to get a job. Set the goal of going there and going, everything any of these people have in terms of information, I'm going to absorb that. Get the information. Don't get in the way of the information. Don't come to school thinking I already know this. I don't need this. I just want the grade. A lot of people just come for just to get a grade, you know. You can see them in the class where they'll go, "What do I need to do to pass this test?" Right? That's not why you go to school. You go to school to get the information from somebody that allows you to be better at what it is you want to do.
And even in your own case, as you just pointed out, you didn't even think you weren't going to school to become a teacher.
Furthest thing from my mind, Clint, I had no idea that this is what I'm saying. I couldn't have planned this any better. And I know it looks like I did. It looks like I did. He went to school. He got his degrees. He got a job. And he became a full professor at a university. This all happened in my hometown. And none of it happened because I planned it. It happened because I prepared myself in terms of, you know, my worldly experience probably helped me more than my actual college education. Because when you think about me coming back when I was almost 28 years old, I had been playing since I was 14, started playing professionally when I was 16, doing my first gigs. And I had played professionally up through 28. Playing six nights a week at the Breckenridge Hotel, those things, right?
That's an education.
That's an education, right?
That's Rick Hayden's voice that we're listening to. And we're really kind of doing a KMOX profile show on Rick Hayden tonight, learning all about his life and career and his musicianship, his teaching. And when we come back, we're not really going anywhere, but next, I want you to tell your Abbey Road story.
Okay.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
With Rick Hayden on KMOX tonight. Rick Hayden, professor emeritus at SIUE. That's one of the ensembles he works with. Who are you playing there with?
That's Reggie Thomas, who I worked with at SIU for 20-some years. Just talked to him. He's in Hawaii right now.
Living there, you mean?
Yeah, you don't have to feel sorry. No, he's just there on vacation. Oh. He'll be home next week.
Must be nice.
Yeah, he's been there for the whole month, so... but Reggie Thomas, Jeff Campbell, who is the chair of the jazz program at Eastman School of Music, and Harold Jones, who is the drummer for Tony Bennett, played with Ella Fitzgerald,
some beautiful brushwork.
Yeah, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And what a guy.
Cool. Okay. I want you to tell the Abbey Road story because Rick recently went to London, but yes. I'll let you tell the whole story of how the whole thing came about because you can't get a tour of Abbey Road.
I mean, no, you get to see the crosswalk and the gift shop.
Yeah.
That's what, if you look it up online and say, I want to go see this, that's what you get to see. You can't get in unless you buy time. Like, master something or record something. It's a working studio. So there are folks in town here who know the name Roger Guth. Roger Guth is one of my best friends. We do a lot of fly fishing together. So Jimmy Buffett gets booked in Dublin, London, and Paris. And Roger calls and goes, I'm going over a week in advance, and I'm going to trout fish in South Ireland. Do you want to go? And I said, yeah. So my wife heard me say that, and she said, well, you're not going without me. So she went, Roger, Kelly, Peg, and myself went to Ireland and stayed at this 14th century estate in Southern Ireland. Beautiful thing. And my return flight had to go through London. And it was not till a week before we left that I thought, I'm going to be in London. I should go to Abbey Road. So I started checking this stuff out and found out I couldn't get in. So I went back to Raj and I said, man, you got to check with Jimmy Buffett, see if he can get me in. I want to see the inside. I don't want to do the crosswalk, right? And then shortly before we left, Raj informed me that I don't think it's going to happen, dude. And I go, okay. So I go back through my buddy list, and I think of Glenn Worf, who I've made friends with over the last 15 years because I do a high school jazz camp in Door County. And he owns property there, and he vacations there in the summer, and he comes to this camp where I teach, and we hang out. So I got to know him through that. Well, Glenn Worf is the bass player for Mark Knopfler. Mark Knopfler owns the console and the four-track tape machine that Sgt. Pepper's was recorded on. So I thought, I'll call Glenn and see if he'll ask Mark for a connection. So I called Glenn. He had just started touring with Mark Knopfler. And he goes, Rick, I'm going to breakfast with Knopfler in about an hour. I'll ask him. So I don't hear anything back. I'm in Ireland now. And I get a text on my phone from Glenn, said, dude, you got to get a hold of me. I have you hooked up. So I get a hold of him. Sure enough, they got me set up to go to the Abbey Road at 9:30 Monday morning, you know. And so I got there at 9 because they said, look, there's a small window because they got another session coming in and they're going to take you on a little tour and then you got to get out of the way so they can do this other session.
They had already had a session that morning.
Yes, they already had one that morning, and then there was a little vent there, a 40-minute window. And so I showed up at 9 and stood out at the wall until about 20 after. Then I went up into the lobby. Fiona Gillette, who is the studio manager, came out to meet me. And she goes, you're Mark's friend? And I said, well, I'm actually Glenn Worf's friend, who is Mark's friend. She goes, oh, okay, well. She takes me through the door. I go into Studio One first, where it's the larger room where the orchestras were recorded. And I was already getting chills. And then we left there. We were in there for a few minutes. And then we walked into Studio Two. And as soon as I walked into Studio Two, it was a religious experience. I mean, I can't tell you what it did for me.
So you really felt something.
I absolutely felt something. Now, you got to understand, at 14 years old, this is like going all the way back to watching the Ed Sullivan Show and seeing the Beatles, getting a guitar to learn how to play because of the Beatles, and then buying all those records and having, you know, I saw the Beatles at Bush. I still have my program at home, you know, $5.50 to see the Beatles at Bush. I was there.
In the rain,
you know. So it's like this whole full circle thing. It was like going to Mecca or something, you know.
Right.
You know, it was like me traveling. It was like this was supposed to happen. You know what I mean? When I walk in and I'm standing, I go, I'm really standing here. And the thing looks exactly like every picture you've ever seen. They haven't changed one thing outside of changing where you go up the steps off to the left up to the control room. That's not a control room anymore. They put that down on the first floor.
Yeah, I'm sure people have seen photographs or probably some film footage where George Martin, the producer, would be up there, you know, take one, you know,
yes,
slating the session.
Yeah, and they would have to play down in Studio Two and then go up the steps to listen to the playbacks off to the side. It's all still there. It was incredible.
And how long were you actually inside?
I was the whole little tour that I had was literally 40 minutes. That's all I was. But I had made it clear to Glenn Worf when I told him, I said, dude, I don't want to do anything other than walk in and stand in Studio Two. I said, I don't have to see anything else. I just, if I can just pull that off, I can go to rest in peace, you know.
Wow, what a story. Thanks for sharing that. We've got about a minute left. Man, the time has flown by. This has been fun.
We have to do this again.
Let's do it. So what's the next chapter for Rick Hayden?
I play at the Unitarian Church on King's Highway on Sunday with Scott Alberisi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then the 17th, I'm at Chaminade High School playing with Reggie Thomas. He'll be back in town. I'll be with him and Reggie and Reggie and Mardra, and Montez Coleman. Be like old home week at Chaminade. And then it's festival season for me. I'm doing a lot of guest clinician stuff. I go to Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. I'm going down to Cape Girardeau and do something for them in February.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. Let's hear a little bit of this this other CD that you brought in. I think it's still available. Maybe we don't have time, but we'll do it next time.
Yeah. We have to do this again. There's too much to talk about.
Yeah, bring
we
back.
We always do this. You come to the house, and you're going to hang for an hour, and we spend the day. So
there they are. That's Rick Hayden. Hey, next hour, we're going to open up the phones for a few minutes. We also have Rennie Knott of Channel 5 we're going to talk to. But we're going to ask you about your reflections on this new year and get your thoughts on the things that have happened over the last decade.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.